This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So here we have the situation where the president of the United States, you know, the president of the United States, the question is being asked, is this guy working for a foreign government? It must have been 20, 30 years ago, the Manchurian Candidate movie came out, which, as I recall, was China, right, as in Manchuria, was basically owned a guy who ran for president of the United States and then, you know, got in. It's an extraordinary question. Do we have a Manchurian candidate? Do we have an actual agent of a foreign power as president of the United States? I think probably the most damning information so far is what the Washington Post came up with. I mean, the New York Times' story Friday afternoon was a shocker, right? Yes, the FBI, during the campaign, this is before Trump was even elected, was looking into whether Donald Trump was acting on behalf of Russia. And then, you know, now it's not just the campaign, it's not just changing the Republican platform or, you know, the positions he's taking, it's the actions he's done. And then on top of that, when he meets with that foreign leader, in this case, Vladimir Putin, he orders the notes destroyed, he takes them away from the interpreter. And there's some debate as to whether these interpreters can even be deposed, whether they can be questioned before Congress or in any other venue. And I'm sure that, I mean, you know, in fact, it would seem that executive privilege would certainly cover something like that, because the whole point of executive privilege is for the president to be able to, and not just the president, by the way, to, you know, the senior officials throughout government, to be able to get candid, honest, unfiltered advice without worrying that it's going to blow up in their face just because they sought that advice. So if he's talking to a foreign leader, you know, you would think that that would be probably the most kind of classified environment possible. That said, though, don't underestimate what the FBI and CIA can pull off, and NSA and everybody else. And then, you know, keep in mind, on the way out of office, President Obama handed to the FBI and the CIA the power to review raw intercepts in ways that may have made the FBI and Mueller's job investigating Donald Trump and his campaign a whole lot easier. But this, you know, takes it back to the question of, are we looking here at the subversion of democracy by, on the one hand, you know, grifter capitalism? Is this all about Donald Trump, you know, going, you know, being a terrible, terrible businessman? Pretty much every business he's ever touched has failed, including his own construction businesses. You know, his casinos, his steaks, his airline, his, I mean, you fill in the blanks, right? Virtually every company fails. He goes bankrupt. He desperately needs money. So he starts getting money from Deutsche Bank, which it was right in the middle of the time when Deutsche Bank was later convicted of laundering money from Russian oligarchs and directly from Russian oligarchs, over $109 million in over 60 transactions that were all cash transactions where that money went right into Donald Trump's pocket or into the pockets of the Trump organization. So is it good old-fashioned capitalism that has corrupted Donald Trump? Are we looking at the cancer stage of capitalism? And here we've got a guy in the White House who's frankly much more interested in his own family's wealth than he is in the fate and future of the United States. Certainly more interested in that than he is in you know, the ability of 800,000 working class Americans to pay their bills. Is it that? Or has a foreign power, specifically in this case Russia, reached out and seized control of Donald Trump? Either through blackmail, through bribery, through flattery, through threats. Could it be that? Or third option is China playing in this game via Elaine Chao, the multi-millionaire wife of Mitch McConnell. He married her. He suddenly got instantly rich. And her family is, you know, Taiwanese shipping, you know, oligarchs. And they make their money transporting goods to and from between China and the United States. So, you know, Mitch McConnell makes, his wife makes her money through international trade with China and dancing to the tune of the Chinese government. Does the Chinese government want to destroy the United States as much as as it is alleged Putin wants to destroy the United States? Or has this got nothing to do with any of that, and this is just, you know, Trump trying to get rich after being broke for years and years? I'm convinced that the guy has had a negative net worth for probably 20 years, ever since his last bankruptcy. It takes a long time to climb out of a bankruptcy. So what is it? Where does it go? And of course, continuing the conversations that were initiated in the previous hour when Congressman Ro Khanna was on here for a whole hour taking your calls. What is actually going on here? John in Auburn, Washington. Hey, John, your thoughts?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I want to tell you, you're one of my heroes, and so are the Congressman Ro Khanna and Mark Fulkin, and thanks for having them on.
Sure.
And I was also hoping that you can get some of the new young congresswomen on your show as well, because I'd love to hear from them.
Yeah, we've been reaching out. We've also tried reaching out to Pramila Jayapal, who is Mark Pocan's colleague as the co-chair of the
Yes, that would be excellent. I hope you can get them, and I hope you can get Bernie back on more often as well. But the reason I called is because I wanted to talk about Mitch McConnell's role in this shutdown, and I think that his role in the shutdown is as great as the role of Donald Trump, because he will not allow the Senate a vote on the same bill that they passed before the Congress changed over the
right. And that bill on December 19th passed the Senate unanimously, and Mitch McConnell will not allow a vote on it. He's the guy who's blocking this. Back to you, John.
And I think that he is in the process of subverting democracy again. He already did it with the denial of Obama's choice for the Supreme Court, and now he's doing it once again with his refusal to bring something to a vote that is obviously would pass if he would let it happen. It would pass with a veto-proof majority.
Yep. Yeah, and it turns out I had been thinking all along that there was a mechanism in the Senate similar to a discharge petition where, you know, if a majority of senators signed on to this thing, they could force a vote. As far as I can tell, I've not been able to find out what that is. As far as I can tell, if Mitch McConnell blocks the vote, that's the end of the discussion. And as he did with not just Merrick Garland, he did it with 30 or 40 other federal judges. Obama only had two federal judges confirmed in the last 2 years of his presidency. And, you know, so far they've done 28 or 32 or something like that. But yeah, and McConnell's role in the shutdown is huge. And McConnell's, and thank you, John, for the call. And McConnell has also apparently taken about $3.5 million from the Russians. And as I said earlier, his wife is up to her eyeballs in Chinese money. So, you know, what the hell is going on here? I don't have an answer, although I have a feeling that we're going to find out a lot of this as the Mueller investigation rolls on. Rob, it's Sky Mill, Pennsylvania. Hey, Rob, what's on your mind today?
Thanks for everything you guys are doing down there today. I think you're nailing it. I wanted to comment about the charter schools that you were talking about before.
Oh, yeah. This is the LA teachers are on strike because the charter schools are draining resources from the school district, and 20% of the people, you know, 20% of the schools now in LA are non-union, charter schools, and that's not, that was never envisioned. Go back to you, Rob. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're ruining the entire school system across the United States with these charter schools.
That's the plan.
I'd like to see them abolished. I think they cost us USA jobs by we wiped out our vocational departments in our schools.
Yep.
To teach our kids, you know, we were teaching skills that not everybody had to go to college before. And sometimes you might have got an opportunity if you knew how to get in the door as a floor sweeper down at Ford's or GM or something. We don't do any of that anymore.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see our senators or the next president work together to take away the funding for charter schools. You know, the Amish and the Chippewa, Saginaw Chippewa Indians up there in Mount Pleasant, they finance their own schools. Let these billionaires finance their own schools.
Yeah, amen. I would like to see a complete ban in billionaire money in these, Bill Gates has been one of the big pushers of charter schools for years and years. And, of course, the billionaire DeVos family as well. Rob, thanks a lot for the call. It's 17 minutes past, it's coming up, on 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of the news of the day and your calls in just a moment. It's the Tom Hartman Program. And welcome back. Dave in Armstrong Creek, Wisconsin. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I wanted to talk about the statement that was made, you know, by Ronald Reagan, the government is the problem.
Right.
And, you know, now it has came to pass, in reality, it is kind of the problem because of the people that represent us in the government, especially on the Republican side. And that has gotten to that point. A lot of it has to do with money, you know, and how they get elected through campaign contributions. And then when they do get in there, they're just the influence of lobbyists, you know, is really a big factor, too. And, you know, I'm really optimistic about, you know, especially the House of Representatives being taken over by a lot of the people would not accept money from super PACs or wouldn't have super PACs or corporations. And that's a good thing. And, I've seen this at play in Wisconsin for a long time where, you know, we have Democrats' vote is, you know, a lot bigger than the Republican vote. Yet we've had this Republican legislature. This all starts at the state level. And we see it in, you know, in the federal elections. But, I think, you know, simply put, the power of money, represents the power of money. As simple as that. I don't know. What do you think of?
Yeah, this is a problem that was created by the U.S. Supreme Court. When the U.S. Supreme Court, back in the 19th century, in 1886, decided to say corporations are people. And then in 1976, in the Buckley versus Vallejo decision, said that giving money to politicians is free speech and it's protected by the First Amendment. Those two decisions handed the control of our government over to a small group of very, very wealthy people, the roughly, 150,000 families in the United States who are worth more than $10 million. Or more than $100 million, excuse me. And that, you know, that is reversible. I mean, that's something that we have to reverse, but that, Dave, spot on. I really think that is the biggest part of our problem. Dave, thanks for the call. Christopher in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Christopher, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, this has been quite a weekend with all this going on with the bombshells about Trump and Russia and stuff. But the one thing that I'm concerned about, have a question about, and I'm calling you hoping that you can help me, is that we keep hearing the FBI open an investigation on Trump. I assume that would have to come from the top, like from the director.
Yes.
And so.
Who at the time was James Comey.
What's that?
Who at the time was James Comey. That investigation has been picked up by Mueller now.
Okay, so it wasn't, this wasn't Christopher Wray, this was
Jim Comey.
Comey opened it. Oh, wow.
Yeah, apparently signed off on this.
I haven't heard that any place on the media. I'm just wondering, that had to be from the top.
Yeah, I think so. And Comey's been rather circumspect on the whole thing, but it sure looks to me like he started this thing, and then when Rod Rosenstein came in and Comey was fired, and so Rosenstein appointed Robert Mueller, and Robert Mueller came in and said, okay, my mandate is to investigate Trump and Russia, and he picked up this ongoing FBI investigation. At least that's my reading of it. Christopher, thanks for the call. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Andy in Wilmington, Delaware. Hey, Andy, what's on your mind? Andy? Okay, Andy is on line 7, Sherry. He's not listening to his phone. Ed in Elkin, North Carolina. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind today?
Tom, I've said all along I was thinking all along that McConnell and his Republican buddies are more involved in this collusion or whatever you want to call it, conspiracy. And I want to ask you, do you think that this investigation, when it comes to an end, do you think it will be allowed to be that these people, if it's proven that they're, you know, all these allegations are proven, will they be convicted of these crimes?
That's a tough one. I mean, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush was president of the United States back in 1992, and Caspar Weinberger was being prosecuted for high crimes and misdemeanors, for treason, basically, the whole Iran-Contra thing, you know, cutting a deal with the Iranians to hold the Iranian hostages so Jimmy Carter would lose the election, and then paying off that by selling them weapons, you know, later on in the 1980s. And not just Weinberger, but Weinberger and five other officials in the Reagan administration were all looking at serious prison time. And then the investigators, Lawrence Walsh specifically, the special prosecutor, subpoenaed George Herbert Walker Bush's personal diaries because it looked to him like George Herbert Walker Bush was himself involved in Iran-Contra and had not just guilty knowledge, but was actually, you know, a criminal, had involved himself in this crime. And at that point, as soon as that happened, the Attorney General of the United States, who had been put into that office a year earlier in 1991 by George Herbert Walker Bush, that Attorney General said, you know, let's just shut the whole investigation down. And the way to do it is to pardon all six objects of the FBI investigation. So George Bush pardoned Caspar Weinberger, and he pardoned the other five people in the Reagan administration who were conspiring to throw the 1980 election to the Republicans by having Iran hold the hostages longer, you know, right up till the election so that Jimmy Carter lost, and then selling those same Iranians weapons in violation of U.S. law in Congress. You know, it's a very straightforward process. The guy who did that, the U.S. Attorney General, who told Herbert Walker Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, the way to get out of this problem is by pardoning these people. That guy is William Barr, the guy who next week, or this week, I guess it is, we're going to hear the confirmation hearings on. Now Donald Trump wants to put him in as AG, so presumably he can do the same thing, shut down the investigation by issuing the pardons. I don't know if it'll work, Ed, but that certainly seems like what they're planning on doing. Did I answer your question?
Yes. Is the Senate is the one? They're the ones that confirm, that will confirm him, right?
Yes. Yeah. Exclusively.
The House has nothing to do with it.
That's correct. The House does not have anything to do with it.
Well, I think it's time that we do something about these pardons. It doesn't make sense to me that these people, these high crimes they're committing,
yep,
they're pardoned. And then all these other people are going to jail for selling pot or something even less.
Yeah. And look back on this. I mean, Richard Nixon committed treason in 1968 to become president. He blew up Lyndon Johnson's peace negotiations with South Vietnam. Richard Nixon's treason in 68 led to an additional 20,000 Americans dying in Vietnam. You know, lots and lots of treasure lost, probably more than 1 million Vietnamese, maybe as many as 2 million dead Vietnamese. You know, the disfigurement of Vietnam, the covering of the country with Agent Orange and everything else. That was Nixon's treason, and Gerry Ford pardoned the guys involved in that. And then Ronald Reagan comes into office, and he cuts a deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages. He commits treason just like Nixon did. He gets elected as a consequence of that treason just like Nixon did. And then his vice president, George Herbert Walker Bush, pardons everybody involved so that Reagan will never be held to account for it, and neither will Bush himself. If history is going to repeat itself, what you're going to see is Donald Trump cutting a deal along with his the whole Trump crime family, along with his kids, to escape prosecution in exchange for stepping down. And, you know, my prediction is that he leaves office this year, sometime this year, probably in the summer, and that he steps down, and that Mike Pence then does the exact same thing Gerry Ford did and George Herbert Walker Bush did, which is pardon all the criminals who were involved in these high crimes so that the president himself can get off scot-free. Nixon got off scot-free, you know, died a free man. Reagan got off scot-free, died a free man. And now Trump is fully intending to do the same, in my opinion, Ed. I think that that's how it's going to go down. But we'll see. Ed, thanks a lot for the call. It's 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls and the news of the day here on the Tom Hartman Program in just a moment. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It's talk media for the rest of us, the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Judy in Healdsburg, California. Hey, Judy, what's on your mind today?
Hey, good morning. You know, Tom, I was just thinking that we're living in a very strange, absurd time, and everybody's waiting for proof of collusion. And with Trump and Putin, of course, collusion means conspiracy, right? And it really, the absurdity is, it's happening right in front of our eyes. He's doing it. His strategy is being open. I mean, look what happened with Syria. There was a comment from Putin. I think Donald did the right thing. Well, you know, Tom, I think Putin must have a constant smile on his face. And he probably said, Donald, shut down the government. And Donald did.
Well, this was the question that I was asking in the first hour is if I mean, Trump is either intentionally harming the United States or stupidly unintentionally harming the United States. If he's unintentionally harming the United States, that opens up a bunch of other questions. If he's intentionally harming the United States, then you have to ask, if you look at each one of his actions, whether it's, you know, bringing Chris Kobach in to suppress more people's votes, whether it's shutting down the government, whether it's putting, a lobbyist in charge of the EPA, a lobbyist in charge of the Interior Department, putting Betsy DeVos in charge of education, you can just go through the list of all the things that he's done, and it looks like they're either intentional or unintentional efforts to destroy the government of the United States of America. And if so, you know, why? Is he doing this because he's dancing to the tune of a foreign oligarch, specifically in this case, Vladimir Putin? Or is he doing it because this is what the fossil fuel billionaires in the United States want him to do? Keep in mind, the libertarian billionaires in this country, the Mercers, the Kochs, et cetera, they also hate democratic, small d democratic government, or democratic socialist government in particular, and want to see our country turned into basically a neo-feudal society.
Well, I think it's all the above. But I also think in Donald's mind, Donald Trump, is that I think it all started with him wanting to build Trump Towers in Russia, in Moscow. And I think there was an agreement made between him and Putin. Donald, listen, you destroy your democracy and you can put up a hotel everywhere and maybe even in the Ukraine.
Yeah, well, he's already got one in Turkey, in Ankara, I believe it is. But yeah,
but I think that's how the whole thing started.
So, this is my original question. You know, 2 hours ago, if Trump is trying to destroy this country, is he trying to do it, or at least the institutions of this country? Is he trying to do it to replace them with institutions of basically neo-feudalism, of, you know, that just serve the interests of the very wealthy? Is this the end game of this project that the Koch brothers have been running since the Powell memo in 1971? And not just the Koch brothers, all these other very, very wealthy oligarchs, you know, Bill Gates, let's take down public education, et cetera, et cetera. Is this the end game? Are we watching this right now in real time? Or is this, you know, some international geopolitical thing? I don't know the answer. Or is it both? I mean, you know, it's international oligarchs. Judy, thank you for the call. These are tough questions. Andy in Wilmington, Delaware. Hey, Andy, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. I'm sorry I couldn't pick up when you called on me before.
It's all good.
I wanted to ask you, I just happened to see the movie Vice over the weekend, and I was unaware of something that was referred to as the theory of the unified executive. You know what I'm talking about?
Remind me.
Now, Scalia came up with it.
And the unitary executive. Yes.
Unitary executive.
Yeah.
Excuse me. It basically says that a president in an office cannot commit a crime just by the fact that they are president.
Right.
And the reason I bring this up is I understand this gentleman, Mr. Barr, who's going to come up for AG, might be a proponent. I think he might have expressed a support for this theory. Are you aware of that?
He's not only did that, but William Barr was brought in as AG by George Herbert Walker Bush in 1991 when Congress was starting, and the prosecutors, Lawrence Waltz, the special prosecutor, was seriously investigating the crimes that Ronald Reagan committed back in 1980 to become elected president. The Iran-Contra deal, the October surprise, his cutting a deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages, to humiliate Jimmy Carter and win that election, and then, you know, subsequently selling weapons to the via the Israelis to the Iranians in order to pay off that deal. It turns out George Herbert Walker Bush was up to his eyeballs in that treason. And when Lawrence Walsh subpoenaed his diaries, which would have demonstrated that Bush was involved in that treason, then at that point, Bush brought in William Barr, and William Barr suggested to Bush, pardon Caspar Weinberger and the other five members of the Reagan administration who were involved in this treasonous crime. And Lawrence Walsh won't be able to continue the investigation any longer because he won't have the basis for an investigation, which is I'm investigating crimes because the crimes had just been wiped out by the pardon. Bush did that. And Lawrence Walsh went out of business, and Bush was able to hide forever. I mean, you know, he just died last year. He was able to hide for the rest of his life his complicity in that treason. The exact same thing or something very, very similar to that happened when Gerry Ford became president after Richard Nixon committed treason to become president in 68. When Ford was brought in, Ford pardoned not just Nixon, but he pardoned a whole bunch of Nixon people who were involved in that treason as well. So I fully expect, but it was William Barr who executed this on behalf of Reagan and Bush back in 92, and I'm fully expecting that it's going to be William Barr who's going to execute it on behalf of Donald Trump next.
Tom, can I ask you, how does such a theory become applied? Does it have to be codified or approved by the courts? I mean, if you believe such a thing, how do you apply such a thing?
What's the such a thing that you're talking about?
I'm talking about this theory that the president is immune from
the unitary executive theory. That would require adjudication. And in fact, the most of what the Supreme Court has said relative to that between the time that Scalia was first talking about it, and actually it goes way back before Scalia. You could arguably take this back to Alexander Hamilton, this theory. And it was heavily debated, by the way, in the 30s. Because the Republicans were yelling that Franklin Roosevelt had turned himself into a dictator. But that theory has been around for a long, long time. It's going to be adjudicated by the Supreme Court, or, you know, Congress will pass legislation that either affirms or invalidates it. But right now it's that gray no man's land of legal scholarship, essentially.
Well, somehow it was used during the Cheney Bush president, or I want to say Bush Cheney, but it was Cheney Bush presidency to justify a lot of stuff.
And, particularly torture.
Phony war.
Torture and the invasion of Iraq. Yeah, absolutely. Andy, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Marlon in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Marlon, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. What's on your mind?
Okay. First off, I want to say that I think that the judge that was sentencing Flynn kind of tipped his hand and showed that we were dealing with treason.
Yep.
He said that he thought that
he used the word
Flynn was treason.
Yeah.
And then he said, go back and work with the special prosecutor.
Yeah.
So go fry the bigger fish. I'm sorry. I was just shoveling snow.
That's okay. It's good exercise. I miss it.
But I think that the Republican Party may be more involved with this than we think, because if they would have lost the election, then there would be no Republican Party, because they barely hold on to power now with all these suppressions.
Well, consider this. Len Blavatnik, who is a dual U.S.-UK citizen, who was born in Ukraine and is good buddies with Oleg Deripaska and other Russian oligarchs, in the last election cycle in 2018, passed out $6.35 million to Republican senators and candidates using two holding companies, A1 ATELP Holdings and Access Industries. $3.5 million of that went to Mitch McConnell, Mitch McTurtle. $800,000 went to Lindsey Graham, $1.5 million to Marco Rubio, $250,000 to John Kasich, and $1.1 million to Scott Walker. I mean, this is oligarch money being passed out to Republican politicians. So
I keep picturing Sam Alito mouthing "not true" and thinking, no, what you said was not true, because it's obviously coming to fruition that all this foreign money is being funneled into our politics.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Marlon, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. We're going to see how this shakes out, but I would say an awful lot of this is just right there in front of us. Why, you know, Trump is either serving the interests of billionaire oligarchs like himself, or he's serving the interests of a foreign government. He is certainly not serving the interests of the people of the United States of America. That is obvious.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
4 minutes from now, we're going to check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world here to wrap up the show today. Stick around. Welcome back. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
Hey, not too much, Tom. Let's just forget about Trump for a second. If any American president, witting or unwitting, is an agent of Moscow or Beijing, it's pretty much game over at this point. I mean, the outcome is the same. I mean, I know you're a student of history, and you were doing this during Vietnam. War is a corporate affair, all right? And just a,
or are the two mutually exclusive? I mean, why can't it be both?
Why can't what be both?
That Trump could be operating in a way that inures benefit to the oligarch class in the United States, you know, super low taxes, stuff like that, at the same time that he's operating in a way that inures benefit to Vladimir Putin and other autocrats all around the world by destroying America's belief in our free press, by destroying our belief in our institutions like the FBI, by essentially weakening and crippling this country. I mean, you know, the oligarchs don't like the FBI either. The oligarchs don't want laws enforced either. The oligarchs don't want regulation. They want to see our government crippled. So you know, the American oligarchs. And similarly, autocrats around the world, whether it's Duterte or Putin or, you know, Bolsonaro, or, I mean, you know, pick your autocrat, your oligarch, oligarchic autocrat. You know, they don't like small-d democracy.
No, it is. You referred to it many times. They hoard wealth. It's a sociopathy. It's a psychological disease.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, for instance, I told somebody this weekend, I said, well, war is imminent because Russia's spending too much money. They were like, well, what does that even mean? You know, Americans generally don't understand anything. That started with George Bush's war on Islam, okay? Russia, all right, for instance, the United States is producing in Tennessee polonium-238 for space vehicles, right? Well, Russia and China will know if that polonium is actually being used for Donald Trump's effort to modernize our nuclear weapons program. This is going to get to the point to where the oligarchs cannot control what is happening. We're going to get to a criticality, a catastrophic chain reaction of events. It is going to lead to World War III. This is what got me fired from the intel business after 25 years, all right? I know this. If I believe someone's just a good person and apolitical, they're not interested in politics, but they're worried about what's going on, I encourage him to do a little research and move near a ground zero spot. It'll be over in like 15 seconds. They won't feel a thing. The rest of us will have to suffer in the aftermath. I mean, this is crazy. The result is the same.
Damn.
Witting or unwitting agent of Russia or Moscow. We're not talking about Al-Qaeda here. We're talking about Russia. We are talking about a modern, maybe the most modern industrial nation, second to the United
States. It's looking increasingly to me, Dave, like there's not a huge distinction between the interests of Vladimir Putin and the interests of the billionaires here in the United States, and that what Trump is operating on behalf of is the international billionaire conspiracy, essentially.
Well, what he perceives of it, yes.
Yeah, and he's part of it too. He's himself. If he really and truly is a billionaire, which I'm very skeptical of, but if he is, then he's part of this. He's part of, you know, keeping in mind, he used to be part of the Koch network. He used to be one of these guys who get together twice a year and figure out which politicians they're going to buy. I mean, you know, it's just very straightforward. We'll be right back. So let's check in with Bob Ney and find out what's going on in the world today. Talk Media News Report is brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Loving What You Do, a new book by Ellen Ratner. Bob is the author of Sideswiped and writes and reports for talkmedianews.com. Hey, Bob, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
So, you know, as a former congressman from Ohio, I put the question to you, Bob. Is Donald Trump acting on behalf of the interests of Russia, or is he acting on behalf of the interests of the billionaire oligarchs in the United States who want to see the United States government weakened and crippled and diminished so that they can be more profitable and have lower taxes? Or both?
Well, I'm old enough to remember the Frank Sinatra, Angela Lansbury Manchurian Candidate.
The movie. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, when you look at really what, and I do want to mention something about the FBI because I'm skeptical of the FBI, but just because of Comey and his history with Hillary and what he did, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I mean, everything you look at, the meetings, Roger Stone, Manafort, Flynn, everybody connected to Moscow. It's almost like the president throws it out there that he has some connection. If you look at the actual, you know, story and report that has come out, you know, a couple of them actually, Tom, where you look at, you know, the money trail over there, the Deutsche Bank. Eric Trump boasted in 2014 that they didn't need funding over here, you know. Of course, and also that Russians, quote, make a pretty disproportionate cross-section of a lot of our assets. That was Donald Trump Jr. in 2008.
Right.
Let me repeat that. Russians make up a pretty disproportionate cross-section of our assets. So having said all of that, I'm Machiavellian, I guess, in the sense of suspicious about the FBI, that now they say, well, they looked at it as an intel source, sort of like the Manchurian Candidate. The only reason I say that, maybe, you know, they throw that out there and then it's kind of disproved and then the president's able to say, you see what they were trying to say about me. I think there's a lot of potential here for extreme problems of the president on the fact of the business and what New York State's going to look into and the Trump children and Kushner and the father of Kushner, et cetera, et cetera. And I think there's a money trail all over the world, but I think there's one with Russia.
Essentially, Bob, is what you're saying that, yeah, Trump may have been sucking up to Russia, but he was doing it because he wants to make himself richer. Trump may have been damaging our institutions, you know, putting lobbyists in charge of the EPA and the environment and the Interior Department and everything else, but he was doing that because he wants to get richer.
I think the problem that, and Ellen and I had a long conversation today about this, I think part of the problem we have to be, as analysts on this, with the media suspicious of internal leaks from the FBI, especially at this point in time of they were looking at this as an intel source.
Right.
I'm not so sure it was as an intel source where he was, you know, born and raised to be a surrogate, you know, for the Russians, right, as much as it's a money trail.
So, in other words, if Trump ruins our country in an effort to make himself rich by building a hotel in Moscow or by, you know, having lower taxes or fewer regulations on his own buildings here and his own income, that still works to the benefit of any government that wants to see democracy diminished.
Absolutely. It's just not a planned, plotted intel situation where somebody's placed.
So they're using Trump's greed as basically the principal tool of destruction of the United States.
Well, yes, and people like to play on that. We know the industrial military complex, the greed, war machines, you know, et cetera.
Yeah.
It's out there. It's been out there.
Wow. It's like the cancer stage of capitalism. What else is going on, Bob?
I can't miss a day without John Bolton. I'm sorry, but you know, someone in Iran lobbed three mortar shells into a vacant lot in Iraq. And John Bolton actually asked for a war plan.
From the Joint Chiefs.
Pentagon.
From the Pentagon.
Yeah.
That's chilling.
Yeah, I mean, it is chilling because he wants a war. Then they're having a world conference. And not that the Iranian government's a picnic, I understand that, but they're also having a world conference where even the Saudis are coming to discuss what? The number one danger in the world, Iran. And, you know, this is organized. This is what you get when you have a national security advisor like John Bolton. And, you know, this story didn't get a lot of attention, but I think it's amazing that somebody lobs three mortar shells into a vacant lot, and we have somebody in the White House that's trying to prepare for war over it.
Yeah, this is actually a much less significant event than the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. And to think that Bolton might have tried to use this, or did try to use this, to possibly start World War III, that's mind-boggling.
It is. Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow. Bob Ney, Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. You can find Bob's book. It's called Sideswiped, wherever you find books. We'll be back with, we won't be back. It's the end of the show, isn't it? When Bob's on, I keep thinking it's the second hour. It's the end. So anyhow, thanks so much for being with us today. Another fascinating day. We'll be back tomorrow, same bat time, same bat channel. So in the meantime, I think we've all got some real serious thinking to do here and learning. You know, is Trump trying to destroy America on behalf of the oligarchs or on behalf of somebody else? Don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.